from the very first moment you hear the song, it just they barge through the door and fall on the ground.
Howdy do. You are looking for trouble, and I am Bad Boy Croy, here with
Garrett T. Caps.
And today we are listening to Tex and the Horseheads' Life's So Cool. Living in tiny apartments across LA, Tex grew up mostly with her grandma, an astrologist and card reader. She started making music right away, sitting in the trees, singing tunes, and throwing avocados at passersby. She saw Iggy and Black Flag and the Germs. Drank lots of beers at the Mask. And was encouraged to front a band herself by Jeffrey Lee Pierce of the Gun Club. Blues were like a man. I was up this morning. Blues were like a man. Worry blues, give me your ride. Tex and the Horseheads was the first band where she was free to have it be whatever speed she wanted. Garrett, Tex and the Horseheads, Life's So Cool.
I love this album.
Hell yes.
It flows. The track listing, it makes a lot of sense to me in the form of a full album. The songs lead into each other really well. Texacala's personality and voice makes everything very memorable. The lyrics are pretty good, and the guitar licks are pretty rad. We're talking Rolling Stones, Exile on Main Street. Meets LA roots punk. Seems like there are a lot of really good production calls on this album.
Well, who produced this record, Garrett?
John Doe produced this record.
Hell yeah.
The legendary singer of the LA cowpunk band, X.
Heard about it because I heard an interview with John Doe. The interview I heard is one we did. I heard John Doe talking in a Trouble Country interview about producing Tex and the Horseheads and how much he liked the record and liked them.
With Tex and the Horseheads, which is a record I produced for them called Life is So Cool, I just wanted them to do what they did, play it right as well as they could, not be too high, because they were great. They had their thing. I didn't need to do anything except just capture it.
So I came at it with like this must be a pretty interesting record.
Texacala, it seems like she was quite a presence. Lots of dudes in the scene were after her, following their strange heroin-induced hearts.
Texacala, I promise
you. I promise
to marry you. Can play one more song? All right, one more song from the Horseheads. Let's hear it.
We're talking about a scene that did not have a strong female presence, and she looked badass, and her band looked badass, and they just seemed kind of like the coolest bands from that scene. Like, their shows were more than likely a debaucherous event.
I don't need that.
They seem like the coolest of the cool in my mind. Cool being like fun and rowdy.
Yeah, you know, cool.
Dangerous.
Yeah, definitely. She may have sort of a self-deprecating opinion of her voice, and her voice is obviously not like classically like a female lead voice or something, but like clearly people in the scene at that time enjoyed her voice because she has lots of notable people involved in her projects, and I can't remember who she was saying at Slash, Chris D maybe, or somebody was like, come over here and let me record you sing 30 fucking songs because the acoustics are good here, you know? So people, yeah, liked her voice.
Do you remember Slash, the zine?
Uh-huh. Well, it was this place, it was upstairs, and it was a magazine, and Christy worked there and stuff, but it was also a record label. One time I was up there hanging out with Chris, and he got this old-fashioned cassette thing, and he said, there is really good acoustics on these steps. So I sat on the steps, and I like recorded he recorded me 30 songs or so, just sitting on the steps there. And sometimes I would go hang out there. So, and a lot of people, sometimes they would go hang out there. So yeah, it was kind of a place for punk rockers, you know.
It's not like a perfect record. There are a couple songs that I don't love. Overall, I mean, it's really got these like kind of Johnny Thunders, like Richard Hell type moments, like just kind of classic New York punk. One thing I was kind of thinking about was like, the New York punk, those guys were like kind of jazz heads in a lot of ways, you know, and were like in New York going to jazz clubs and stuff. And so there's like this weird skronky like jazz guitar that those dudes would do, Tom Verlaine and stuff. And so it's almost like that, but with like some sort of rocked out country southern rock style guitar instead. It's like Tex and the Horseheads, like kind of punk amalgamum, is like punk with country guitar instead of like the New York jazz guitar or something, which I think personally hits me harder. I'm more into that. I think that there's probably no mystery really as to why the punks in New York are listening to jazz and the punks in California are listening to, in Southern California are listening to country, you know? I mean, there's just jazz clubs all over New York, and California is, people don't, never think about it because they just think about LA and San Francisco or whatever, but huge country capital of the world. You're more likely to walk into a thrift store and find Western wear in California than in New York City. And you're more likely to walk into a small bar and hear country music in New York City as well, so.
Well, this stuff's made in New York City!
New York City!
Stranger, I hope you can beat a full house.
Some of the best country and the best punk is like more id than ego, you know? It's kind of just like raw. Some of the cowpunk loses me is that it feels a little too like ego. It's a little too like, they're going for something. They're trying to do something. Tex and the Horseheads feels very raw to me. It feels very like unconscious, just sloppy in a good way, like loose, raw, natural music. Garrett, what kind of influences are you hearing on this record?
We're talking Stones. We're talking L.A. fashion rock. Yeah. And whatever the hell Jeffrey Lee Pierce was into. She says that he got her into like George Jones.
Well, in North Carolina, way back in the hill, lived my old pappy and he had him a still. He brewed white lightning till the sun went down, and then you'd fill him a jug and he'd pass it around. Mighty, mighty pleasing, pappy's corn squeezing.
White lightning.
They're trying to be a cowpunk band. Straight up, their lyrics are lonesome and about having problems and your relationships or with substance abuse.
Thematically, it's got plenty of country themes, just in the ways that like country deals with kind of down and outness, just about like drinking too much and trying to stop that and heartbreak and all the stuff. So
I know she'll be looking bad the minute I'm not there. While she pours herself on some stranger, I pour myself a drink somewhere. She's acting single, I'm drinking double. I hide my pain, I drown my trouble.
I like how a lot of the lyrics aren't just about wearing your cowboy boots.
Yeah.
Like they are, that like they do delve into the themes of country music instead of just, you know, it isn't fashion cowpunk all the way.
And they have a slow song on there that they do well. I have been vocally critical of when cowpunk bands try to do slow songs. Big House 3, I like that song.
'Cause I'm burning all day long. I'm wondering. You got said, don't give it long. There's no time to look for you. And don't eat that funny cake. You don't know what it is.
Yeah. Cool.
It's kind of like almost like a Guns N' Roses ballad. Definitely like a, like you said, there's definitely a Stones vibe.
Took the turn off night, I should have stayed on the end to stay. I was lost in the real, my map was kind of out of date. I saw the lights of Mars, I guess it was a scenic route. When I had to change a tie, I'm glad I wore my western boots.
But they're doing just enough of the country western. There's like just enough twang, you know, it's distorted, it's punk rock guitar, but I don't know, it's like it'd be a fun listening experiment for you, the listener, and maybe I'll do it too. To really just listen to like the little differences between the way these dudes do like their little licks and their in-between stuff versus like maybe like Johnny Thunders or something. There's just like a little more twang to it, you know? It's cool.
Yeah.
When we're talking New York punk, we're talking about like first wave New York punk. So we're talking about stuff that is not like fully divorced from the 60s and 70s yet. It's not like straight up like chugging power chords and stuff.
I also noticed that she is compared quite a bit to Stiv from the Dead Boys.
Oh, wow. Cool.
the female version.
Cool, no way.
So there you go.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that's like a thing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Dead Boys are not a New York band. They're an Ohio band. But certainly, you know, made probably, I think they cut those records in New York or something. But have you guys read Please Kill Me? The Dead Boys are like from fucking Cleveland. They're like actual just like roughneck, hard-ass dudes, you know? And they like go to like the spot where all the punks hang out, and it's Andy Warhol's factory. And they're like, and Please Kill Me, they're like all sitting on one couch, just like feeling like they like are on like an alien planet, looking around at all these people like in weird costumes doing like weird That's like awesome. Sex stuff.
Andy, do you think that pop art has sort of reached the point where it's becoming repetitious now?
Yes.
Do you think it should break away from being pop art?
No.
Are you just going to carry on?
Yes.
Shiny, shiny, shiny boots of leather. Whiplash, girl.
And they like lasted like 15 minutes just like sitting on like the couch, and then we're like, maybe, you know, nice town if you like saxophones, basically, and got the fuck out of the factory. As an Ohioan, I always, who moved to Austin and felt very much like a Philistine down here, down there, I was like, I always appreciated. That's our cultural heritage, is being a little uptight.
It's funny that you bring up Guns N' Roses. I feel like this is this is total L.A. Like, Texacola Jones is a product of L.A.
Yeah.
Sunset Boulevard persona. It kind of reminds me of Guns N' Roses, or whatever they were called before they were Guns N' Roses. L.A. Guns. Or yeah. Motley Crue. That kind of vibe. Yeah. And it's very fashion centric, rock and roller. She gets all the badasses to back her up.
Yeah.
It reminds me of listening to the Gun Club. I think that because her personality is so big, you know, you listen to her interview, she's pretty mysterious when it comes to talking about specifics.
So is Tex your real name, Tex Jones?
Yep, it's my real name at the moment.
How often does the moment change?
About every 2 years.
Yeah.
I think that New York punk sound could also just be like her sound. Or like she doesn't know exactly what she's getting it from.
How would you describe your performances? I've seen you around, you play pretty wild.
Absolutely impeccable. I never saw anything like it. Hope I never see anything like it again.
So, I mean, the New York Dolls are coming to mind for some reason.
And you're a prima ballerina on a spring afternoon. James on it to the wolf man, howling at the moon. Ow, not a personality crisis. You got it while it was hot. It's always hot, you know, with frustration. Honey, what you got?
There's a glammy element to the whole thing.
There's a glammy element that's almost oddly more New York than LA for punk, right? Like the Germs and the Circle Jerks and stuff were like not very aesthetic bands, right? Go! So it's like, it's interesting that Tex and the Horseheads are kind of like one of the key parts of like the cowpunk scene, because the cowpunk scene, a lot of those people were like wearing jean jackets and like Pearl Snap shirts, you know, and
yep.
They're out there looking like fucking Motley Crue, like fell off like a wagon train or something.
Right.
I definitely just think I recommend to the listener to look up this record, because I like have looked at the album cover so much since I've got
Pink
it.
Pink Cadillacs, and, baby.
A bit of trivia.
Ah.
Jeff Smith told me that the first Hickoids flyer is on that car.
No way.
No, officer, you don't understand. We got a brand new way of living.
Yeah, there's just a lot going on, and they totally look badass. And yeah, definitely knowing that like this came out on Enigma Records, which put out the first Motley Crue record, and then looking at these guys, this is like the Roots version of Motley Crue.
I like that.
Punk in a lot of ways was trying to like refute classic rock. There's like Johnny Rotten telling a story way back in the day. Johnny Rotten's wearing a shirt like in this 78 or whatever that said like Pink Floyd sucks or something, or fuck Pink Floyd or something.
Yes.
And in the interviews, he's like, that was like worse than wearing a shirt that said like Kill the Queen or something.
Hello, you're listening to Johnny Lydon, also known as Rotten. Of course I like Pink Floyd. I don't hate Pink Floyd. I actually really love Pink Floyd. Arnold Lane comes to mind, all these things. And Sid Barrett, you know, was one of the original writers. And I've got to tell you, like, John Beverly got the nickname Sid because of Sid Barrett. I called John Sid. There you go. Pistol history.
Disliking Pink Floyd was the most offensive. And I feel like it's always important when you're talking about early punk rock, that, like, you know, by the time we came up in punk rock had like one definition, and it was NOFX.
Or Green Day.
Yeah, Green Day. Yeah.
Spent 15 years getting loaded. 15 years till his liver exploded. Now what's Bob gonna do now that he can't drink? The doctor said, what you been thinking about? Bob said, that's the point. I won't think about nothing. Now I gotta do something else.
Hard, hard, hard!
Before punk was perfected by NOFX.
Warped Tour. Warped Tour.
Yeah, you can just say Warped Tour, exactly.
All right, Croy, what is your favorite track on this record?
Well, hard to pick because I really did love a lot of tracks on this record. But honestly, like if I was talking to somebody who is uninitiated and they didn't understand what I meant by Trouble Country, I'll Quit Tomorrow might be a song that I would put on just to try to help illustrate what I'm talking about. This song is like quintessential Trouble Country. The opening guitar lick that's twangy but super overdriven.
I'll quit tomorrow, be damned to hell. I'll never get drunk no more.
I mean, I guess he's playing an explorer or something.
Well, I woke up this morning and I needed a drink. I felt so bad I threw up in the sink.
Those are definitely, those are humbuckers.
Yes, I will.
This is Trouble Country Gold. We've talked about the guitars multiple times, but the guitars on this record are awesome. To me, it's a perfect mix just for my own palette of country and kind of punk rock and roll, and this song personifies it. Everything about it's a country song, and then it's performed with punk rock attitude and kind of like punk rock guitar tones and stuff. For my money, that's right where it's at.
Tomorrow be damned to hell. I'll never get drunk no more.
Lightheartedly about alcoholism and like being down and out, which is an, you know, country is good at like tackling alcoholism in a lighthearted way. It's plenty of country songs that do that.
Hey, Mr. Bartender, please don't be so slow. I got time for one more round and a six pack to go. Tomorrow morning, Sunday, I'm gonna be feeling low. So please, please, bartender, I want a six-pack to go.
I'll quit tomorrow. I promise I'll quit tomorrow. Tonight's my last bender because then I'm quitting. It's funny. It's classic. That's country
George
shit.
George Jones to the bone.
That's George Jones to the bone, yeah.
I've been sitting here
here so long, just remembering that you are gone. Well, one more drink of wine, then if you're still on my mind, one drink, just one more, and another.
It also, it sounds like a goddamn trouble country song.
Yeah.
All the way.
Yeah.
From the very first moment you hear the song, it just, they barge through the door and fall on the ground.
It was the first one, when I first listened to the record, it was like the first song that like really jumped out. And I was like, oh, hell yeah, I love this. The rest of the record, I'm not sure, but this I love. And then over time, I really learned to love the whole record.
So online, I really like listening to this record, because when Spider and Peach kicks in, it's like an excellent double whammy. But I guess if you were listening to it on wax, it doesn't happen that way.
I had that same thought today, though. They go into each other so awesome on that.
They might even be in the same key or something.
Yeah. The YouTube rip of this like has no gaps. It's a gapless play or something. There's no gaps between the tracks. And that one works awesome. Yeah, I'll Quit Tomorrow right into Spider and the Peach, which Spider and the Peach is like my favorite rock and roll song at the moment. Yeah, I'll Quit Tomorrow is my pick. Garrett, you got a track on here you really want to talk about, you love?
Yeah, the track before this one, The Slip.
Oh, yes.
Point your finger when you're rolling.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll see you later, honey.
Well, I'm giving you the slip, cause you're about to make me flip. Tombstone brain or rattlesnake eyes. You're right at home with ordinary people. You couldn't drag me through that steeple. I'll never be yours, and I hope you're never mine. I'll never be yours, and I hope you never mind. But then from time to time, I really like the way you get us.
I like that song because it's a country duet, Johnny and June kind of thing. I am a sucker for duets anyways, but it's playful and fun. It kind of reminds me of, who is it, Loretta Lynn and
Conway Twitty. And
You're the Reason Our Kids Are Ugly.
You're the reason I'm riding around on recap tires.
You're the reason our kids are ugly, little darling. Oh, but looks ain't everything, and money ain't everything, but I love you just the same.
Conway and Loretta.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I don't like you.
Yeah.
And it's a quick song. It seems like it was either a production decision or it was something they wrote in the living room or on the porch.
Well, I never knew you had such habits, drinking beer and spearing rabbits. Those crazy things that drive me out of my mind. Well, why don't you give me a break, or you can go jump in a lake. You know I was too drunk when I met you. Well, I'll never be yours, and I hope you never mind. But then from time to time, I really like the way you got insane. Well, I know that when you're having fun, it's not too fun for everyone. We told you time and time and time again.
It's like something they do, a party trick.
Yeah.
Because I could totally hear them playing this full band.
Sure. Yeah.
You know? She also says, Mike, you scared off Screaming Jay Hawkins at the very end of the song.
Hey, Mike. Remember last night?
More, I'll never be yours, and I hope you're never mine. But then from time to time, really like the way you get insane. Well, I know that when you're having fun, it's not too fun for everyone. We've told you time and time and time again.
Mike, you scared Screaming Jay Hawkins to death.
Probably the reason that there isn't more of that on the record is because they are ostensibly a punk band, you know, they really are, like the aesthetic and the cowpunk thing. I mean, any band that's like at the forefront of a thing is like not totally, you know what I'm trying to say? They weren't trying to be cowpunk because they were like just kind of happening to define it as it was happening. It's moments like The Slip that like define this record as not an 80s LA rock or punk record, you know? That's why like in hindsight, it's like, wow, that's cowpunk, because they have moments like that where like other bands are not going to have a not electric fucking moment on the record. You know, it's like even when Guns N' Roses slows it down, it's like still going to be like, super chorusy Les Pauls and stuff.
That song sticks out to me.
Yeah.
But I like other songs like Billy Black. There's a lot of likable songs on this album. So
Bartender Sam and Bandana, Jailed Again. Seriously, like all the rest songs are good.
Yeah. I also feel like The Slip, we might as well just go ahead and say that it gives me Range Rats vibes.
Cool. Yeah.
It does.
Totally. Totally.
Well, I'm saying that.
Totally.
This is the desk of half-ass internet research. Take it to the YouTube comments.
Here at Trouble Country, we say, let's go read the comments.
What do the YouTube people have to say?
My 80s hardcore band played with the band when they were on tour in Detroit, but Tex wasn't feeling well, so the band showed up. And these guys had cowboy boots and hats and were a bit tilted. We had our gear set up and the guys asked if they could play, and they went into a rendition of Manic Depression, and we didn't know what to think. Somehow we played and one guy jumped off the stage head first. Listening to this, they actually sound really good. Nice enough, guys. We wish them well.
That's a very good comment.
Meandering story, hard to totally figure out what the story means. And then, Yeah. And then actually, I booked the band for a show in the South Bay area in 1985. They were so awesome that night, I asked Texacala to marry me. She turned me down.
I saw that one.
Yeah.
Here's a comment. College radio convention. There was a drugstore down the street, and my buddy and I kept going back for beer. Got hammered. Waiting inside the bathroom to piss, and Tex busts in and says, "Just piss in the sink. Ain't nothing I ain't ever seen before. Meet two hot chicks, went to their room. Woke up around 6 a.m. Out of nowhere, there were 20 people sleeping on the floor. Grabbed my boots and some dude gave me a thumbs up on the way out. Fucking great night. Thanks for recording this."
Oh, man.
That's a pretty good one.
Yes. Oh, man. So good. So this is an interesting firsthand account of the early days. They performed weekly at the Café des Grandes. I think that's Cafe, maybe, but she said Cafe de Grand. In Hollywood, 1984, Tex was only 18 years old, and they went down with the ship when LAPD and fire department closed us down for being too popular. The beginning of the genre cowpunk, recorded at Mystic Sound Studio and well on Mystic Collectible Records. The city of LA didn't want musicians performing and singing about everyday life. So that's someone in the scene. Yeah, LAPD shutting down a club for being too popular. Silencing a band singing about everyday life. Ain't that
Side
the
note,
truth?
I'm on their MySpace page right now. And I'm looking
at
a...
the Horseheads MySpace?
It's barely working, but... I'm looking at a Guns N' Roses flyer with Tex and the Horseheads open. This looks like definitely
Chinese
early
democracy.
Mid-80s.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Cool. That's interesting. So they actually were friends with GNR back then?
Yeah. I think it was before GNR blew up.
Cool. Oh, wow. This flyer really... points to how punk rock they were. This bill is TSOL 45 Grave and Tex and the Horseheads and a band called the Floor Lords. This Guns N' Roses thing says send donations to Guns N' Roses, keep us out of jail fund.
Well, you know, maybe Texacala Jones is the Axl Rose of Trouble Country.
We are 100% onto something with that.
Bottle, I got it at your store. As long as that damn bottle's full, I never
All right, Croy, how troubled is this album?
I think I'm going to toss this one up into the very top. When we're talking quintessential Trouble Country records, I'm putting this one right up there with the best of them. I think this is really helpful in understanding what Trouble Country is and what it means to mix these sort of things and to have, you know, seemingly disparate influences kind of clash together in cool ways. Like, I think they not only are they a great example of mixing kind of what we're talking about in Trouble Country, which is kind of, in this instance, like 80s punk rock with classic country music, but they do it in an honest, enjoyable way. And I do want to say that the first couple songs are not my favorite. The first one specifically, just it almost feels like a little too like Richard Hell or something to me, a little too Voidoids. Yeah, all right. Yeah.
I like the guitar riff that kicks off the album, though.
I do, too. The guitars are awesome on this record, and it reminds me of the first time I listened to Jason and the Scorchers. I was, like, really blown away by the guitar work.
I'm a rolling stone.
And that's still kind of like, for me, like some of the best, like what we call cowpunk is like Jason and the Scorchers guitar. But this is like rivals that for me. This is like some of my favorite cowpunk guitar that I've heard. I think
it's way better than the Scorchers.
Oh, okay. Cool. And X. Just kidding.
Don't take that. That's a Trouble Country joke. You know?
Yeah. But once it hits its groove, this record is pure trouble, not so pure country. I love it. Anyways, Garrett, what are your thoughts? What do you? How much trouble?
I think it's extremely troubled. It deserves its place in the Trouble Country Hall of Fame. And you know, I've been trying to devise a metaphorical rating, but I don't think I have one right now.
We put him on the spot.
I've been trying to think of it all day.
We put him on the spot. He knows this is the thing he does.
This is my thing. I'm going to have to do it next time.
That's fine. Yeah. That's totally fine.
Oh, yeah. Tex is short for Texicala. I don't know. Tex is a stage name that she said she got because she would carry a, well, it's a weird word to say, but it's called a jigger, the J. I'm going to call it like a big shot glass, I guess, or something.
It's a bar.
Jigger. Okay. Yeah, yeah. No, I know. I know that. I listened to the same interview you guys all listened to. I know that. Dram. She carried a dram. A tot. A sip. A nip. A slug. A snort. A concern. A concern. A contraption. A contrivance. Okay. So anyways, basically she said that, yeah, she was known for being able to drink quite a bit of whiskey, and she actually had this, like, jigger that she would carry around in her purse, that was like oversized, and I think it said like everything's bigger in Texas or some. So she would pull that out and then fill that with whiskey and then drink it all. And so people started calling her Tex because she had a Texas-sized jigger that she would fill with whiskey, and she had a Texas-sized appetite for whiskey.
Yeah,
I used to be able to drink a lot of whiskey, and Pleasant gave me this jigger glass, and it said Texas jigger, and it was like this size. It was huge. And so I used to go around with my jigger glass. I'd whip it out of my purse and stuff. And people just started calling me Tex. I don't know. I can't really remember.
So that what's interesting is that explains why she goes by Tex. More interesting that at some point she extended that to Texicala. Because I just assumed Texicala would be like her real name and then she went by Tex. But Tex is a nickname, so Texicala must be also an invented name. I don't know what
is it? California. Texicala.
Texicala, yeah. But what's her real name? Is it publicly known?
I am not on my half-assed internet research.
We don't have right the now. Original name. Which she, that's cool. She's a. There's a lot about Texicali Jones that is mysterious, and we like that. So we don't have to go there. Some things can be. I know we're participating in like the killing of like mystery by doing a podcast, which seeks to like analyze every fucking thing. But the proliferation of the podcast exists to try to destroy all wonder and answer every question, and we are now complicit in that. But let's let this one ride. Her name is Texicali Jones. That's all we need to know. Well, there you have it. Texicali Jones is quintessential cowpunk outfit Tex and the Horseheads, with a little bit of help from Gun Club's Jeffrey Lee Pierce and X's John Doe, helped to make Southern California seem almost cool for a brief moment in the 80s. Loud, drunk, and twangy, life so cool seems troubled indeed. Buddied up with Tex and the Horseheads' Life So Cool, you can find a full list of all the tunes spun in this pod on our show page. Now, we didn't get into all this trouble by ourselves. This pod was produced by troublemaker-in-chief Dade Hoffman, edited and co-produced by Clayton Price, with writing and production assistance by Josh Fiola. Come on back next time when we'll be talking about Wall of Voodoo's techno-dystopian meditation, Call of the West.